At the end of the day, open source is not just about saving money. It's about freedom. It gives enterprises and organizations true digital sovereignty, ensures interoperability with partners, customers, technologies, and also keeping control of your data in your hands. So I think that's the most important thing.
Hello and welcome to the Open Matters podcast, the show where we talk about open source matters that matter. Today, we're going to tackle one of the big questions people outside and even inside the open source world often ask. Why pay for software that is free? To explore that, I'm joined by Eloy Crespo, head of sales at Collabora Productivity. Eloy has spent more than 15 years building sustainable businesses around open source technology, helping organizations large and small unlock the value of freedom without sacrificing stability or support. Hello, Crespo. Bienvenido al podcast.
Thank you very much. Muchas gracias, Richard. It is a pleasure to be with you here.
I thought we'd just start with that massive elephant in the room. You've built millions of euros for free software. So we just have to ask the question, why does anyone pay for free software?
That's a really, really good question, and probably something that we need to always not discuss, but talk with potential customers and partners every single day when you work on the sales environment of open source projects. And the free software doesn't mean it is free or it is zero cost or something like that. The free of that part of free software is because of freedom. It's because it's free from libertad in Spanish, from the freedom of choice. That's completely different of thinking that the software is free. Of course, there is a correlation between free software and the free license and getting the software or the license for free, but that's that not mean that you don't need all the services and support around this software. So it's very similar to any other product that is closed software. It's a good product, you need to pay for the support. End of a story.
So basically, you're saying that English is a bit rubbish.
Well, in this case, not rubbish. I wouldn't say that. But obviously, this have a different connotation because, for example, in my country, in Spain, when you talk about free and you're trying to translate that word, it's always gratis. It's free of cost. So it's not in English. It's when you're trying to translate that into other languages, I guess.
I think sometimes people talk about, so free as in freedom or free as in free beer.
Exactly. Correct. And obviously as a very big component, the open source and free software as a very big component of freedom is probably one of the most important parts of the free software and open source, no? But yes, it's freedom. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a lot more philosophical than I usually think of when we're thinking about software and trying to compare things. If I'm looking at two software options and I see that one of them is free or open source, maybe I don't think about that. I just want to compare its features.
Exactly.
Is it better? Is it worse? But you're suggesting that there's a much more philosophical aspect to this, perhaps. So what am I missing when I'm comparing software?
Well, when you are comparing software, obviously the users are going to compare the features and the functionality that you have, right? Especially with software like us, that is a daily software use. I mean, it's an online office suite. You work on documents every single day, right? You do not want to compromise your productivity. You want to continue using the tools that you know you are using and continue doing the things that you normally do on a document, right? But if you normally compare open source software with other vendors software or closed software, the functionality is there. You are not missing or compromising anything. But the good thing of the open source is that brings more value to the table, more benefits. It's something that you get as an additional thing. And of course, these additional features are not pure functionality or pure specific icon that you click and this thing appears now in front of you. We are talking about something else. We are talking about values. And these values are really great. It's something that you really want to have. And I think it's a huge differentiation between open source and closed software. So for example, these years we are talking about a lot digital sovereignty, right? And when we talk about digital sovereignty, you always think about privacy or things like that, which is also the case. But when you talk about digital sovereignty, that's not the only thing. It's this word of vendor lock-in, is the possibility to decide. And when you are adopting a solution in your company or your organization, I think it's a huge value to have the possibility to decide, to have choices, and do not compromise your choices because one specific decision. So that's really great. I think it's a really good value. So yes, it's a direct relation between values, how you see the future of your company, organization, and also these ethical values of open source.
I wonder if sometimes it's much clearer when we look at the physical world around us. I think I know in America, they've got a big thing going on with their right to repair bill.
Yep.
Maybe you buy some incredibly expensive tractor, combine harvester thing, and you discover, oh, you're not allowed to repair the thing. Suddenly that's very obvious, but maybe we don't think about that with software because it's less, it's not so tangible.
Correct, correct. And also everyone knows about different things. For example, if you buy a car, most of the people knows how a car works. Maybe not on the most detailed information on how this car works or the engine works or all these kind of things. But when you work on with software, you only see the user interface. And normally the most common users or the majority of the users, they don't really know how this software works behind the scenes, right? So there is a huge misunderstanding on lack of knowledge on how this thing works. So we do not pay a lot of attention on what is behind, right? And sometimes it's probably one of the most critical parts when we are using a software, what is happening behind the scenes.
So your product is called Collaborate Online. Is it not available for free, as in free beer?
Great. So as an open source, 100% open source code product, yes, we have a free version of Collaborate Online. We offer this free version of Collaborate Online called Code, Collaborate Online Development Edition, to every single user that wants to use it. And we put a lot of effort on making this version really great. And sounds a little bit tricky, right? Why you are putting a lot of effort on making something free working properly, right? And that's because it's really important for us to deliver quality software, even if it's on the free version. And why is that? Because normally when you are trying to adapt or use a new solution, first of all, you want to test it, right? You want to see that it works. You want to see that it's what you are looking for, right? Or fits your needs. So in this case, it's really, really important to make this software as much better as we can and making something really good. And then obviously we have the supported version of Collabora, and we offer this for millions of paid users right now in many different countries and locations, many different targets, since public administrations, public entities and enterprises. And there is a huge benefit of having a free software, a free version, let's say. When you ask or think about, well, you're losing money, that's not right. When you have a free version that a huge number of people and community behind that can test, contribute to that, improve, you are making a much better software. So if you only have a closed software, only your developers are going to be able to improve that. In our case, no. Millions of users are contributing to making the best possible software. So this is really great because at the end of the day, when you pay for the support, you are going to have even a much better product. So that's really, really, really great. This is another add value of open source, the communities behind that.
And that's part of the MPL license that Collaborate Productivity uses, isn't it? Anyone can work on it. Part of that license is you have to then put it together. You can't.
Correct.
So you've got all that power from any individual, any organization that's developing the code. It's really working together.
Exactly, exactly. It's like having a lot of manpower working for you. Obviously, these people are contributing on their free time, or they are involved in other projects or whatever, but these are all people that want to contribute to making a better software. And that's thanks to our license of free software license and how we distribute the product. So there is a huge benefit. Of course, there is a different conversation. Maybe we can have a different podcast. I'm probably not the most correct person for this podcast about how to build a community behind open source, which is not easy. It's very tricky and it's very difficult, right? But when you have it, when you have something interesting and when you have a good community like us in Collabora, it's incredible the things that the community can accomplish. And this is directly related to making a better software for our paid users.
For a software-based podcast, we've been talking a lot about philosophical ideas. Would you argue there's a moral angle to paying for software?
I think so. Really, because this really depends on each human being, on how you see the world and all these kind of things, right? But it's also directly related to this digital sovereignty thing, right? It's the possibility to have choices, and also the software IT industry trying to create monopolies around a specific software. And this is not good for the user. This is not good for the world. And I think creating more and more open source solutions are bringing more possibilities, more choices, and of course, more or better software for the user. So escape from monopolies and people who is trying to just do whatever they want with what they offer is exactly what I think is best on these regards.
It reminds me a lot of those sort of game theory ideas where you have the prisoner's dilemma or the split or steal. You have two people and they can choose to split in a prize or steal it. And if they both choose steal, then neither of them gets it. If they both choose split, then usually you're working together is the best way to get the best outcome.
Absolutely. And also there is an additional thing, right? When you can see the software, you can audit the software. You can really see what is going on and you can have an impact there. Not only if you contribute, just to look in or double checking what is happening behind the scenes when you are running a specific software.
I was recently talking with one of our partners who is selling open source software in the Netherlands. And he said that the feeling around open source software is changing there. He talked about a first wave and a second wave now. Are you finding that you still have to explain and defend open source software, or do you think the public perception has or is changing?
I think it's changing, and it's changing for multiple reasons. I agree with this partner on this idea of how we are now not trying to, because in the past 15 years ago, you are always trying to justify that you are not a bunch of geeks typing code on a van. You have a company, right? And you have people that is getting paid because they are putting all their effort and all their hours on making a good software and supporting the customers, right? But in the past, that was like a hippie thing, you know? Right now, this is not happening. The reason why is because the investment, first of all, and most important, the investment of multiple enterprises, public administrations on open source. If more people pay and adopt open source solutions, the better, because reduce risk on customers' mind, right? And also because of political things or movements inside our political sphere pointing into this direction. Like, for example, the Interoperable Europe Act. This legal thing that I'm not going to go deeper into this is trying to just open the possibility for multiple countries to adapt solutions that other countries are using. And the basics of this Interoperable Europe Act is open source and openness. So all these kind of movements inside politics and governments on trying to make open source more visible and also adaptable for many different countries and many different organizations is helping a lot. And then related to that, things like the privacy and this huge thing about GDPR, for example. You don't know about open source, but if you ask your neighborhood in your neighborhood about GDPR, most of the people knows what it is, right? And when you talk about GDPR, it opens a box about many different things. And I think these kind of legal aspects and policies are really helping on making open source more visible.
So you work in sales. Are you able to share with us a little bit of numbers, put some flesh on the bones of that? For example, I think something like 95% of the web servers are now powered by open source software like Apache and Nginx. You work in the document editing industry. What are you seeing?
Yes, for sure. In terms of specific numbers, it's really hard to get specific numbers on how people or countries are investing money in open source, because sometimes these open source investments are a big box of many different projects, many different things, right? For example, in France, this is happening. They are investing a lot of money, but we do not have a clear figure that we can use in order to bring to the table that they spend this amount of millions, right? It's a little bit tricky. But for example, in Germany, you have something called Sovereign Tech Fund that publishes information about how much money the public administrations are investing on open source. And we are talking about 17 million in 2024. And increasing, they are think about increasing for 3 million from this 17 million in 2025. So you see the trend, right? We are talking about millions, more than 15 million euros investing on open source solutions and on this kind of software, right? So the market is there, the amount of money is there, and not only on public institutions, because we are talking about a lot of public institutions. But it's true that when you talk about numbers or you want to put numbers on the table, you need public administration numbers, because enterprises normally, they do not share those figures, right? But yes, we are talking about Germany, 20 million, almost 20 million. France is going to be more or less the same. There are a lot of ministries and public institutions investing in open source right now. And we see the trend in other areas, other countries. In the last month, I read a lot of news about how Denmark, for example, is trying to migrate to open source because of this digital sovereignty and public money, public code strategy. And not only Denmark, also Austria is moving forward. The Netherlands is also making a huge effort on investing money on open source. Again, I don't have the specific figures, but if you read the news and you are interested on these kind of things, you read this kind of news quite often these days.
That's a lot of European countries. Is this a European phenomenon, or are we seeing this elsewhere?
I think the in Europe, something that is happening, the geopolitical situation is changing and is drastically changing the picture on how we see the world and how the world works, right? So this geopolitical situation is making Europe to really think more about this digital sovereignty and which kind of solutions they use. Also, in parallel, you have the cloud topic. Obviously, the cloud is just a server running for you, right? Somewhere. But when you think about the cloud and where is your data, I think Europe is leading that conversation. But we do not see this only in Europe. We see this also in Africa and especially in Asia. In Asia, there are plenty of different countries like India, China, Japan, doing huge investments on trying to escape from a vendor lock-in and trying to build their own sovereignty solutions based on open source to run their public administrations and businesses. So yes, the only thing that I see different from these countries and Europe is that Europe is trying to work together, multiple countries, as a union, let's say, creating laws and creating legalese around this, which is probably one of the most important points. Why? Because when you are running a ministry or a public institution and you need to do a tender to adapt a specific software solution, you really need legalese in order to compete between open source and closed software, right? And they are working on that direction. And that's the reason why it's different and is the tip of the spear right now.
Thanks, that's really helpful. We had a very interesting conversation with someone from the Open Source Business Alliance earlier on this podcast, talking about tendering and this kind of legalese. So
exactly.
So you've spoken quite a lot about nations and the public sector there. What about in the private sector? Are we seeing similar arguments and similar thoughts?
I think it's very, very similar. It is true that from the public administration point of view, there are legal things, as we discussed before, and many different things. But also this geopolitical situation is affecting enterprises. If you have sensitive data, if you are running a lot of information from users, all these kind of things, you really need to be concerned about that. But remember that I told you at the beginning, digital sovereignty is not only privacy. It's also the possibility of choice, right? So yes, absolutely. I think interoperability is something that we didn't discuss. And when you talk in our case about interoperability with documents, you talk about different file formats, but it's transparent code when you talk about interoperability, open standards, things that are open and easy to integrate with many different partners, etc. This is interoperability. And this is good when you are making a decision in your company, private company, enterprise, about using a specific solution, and also cost and efficiency. Obviously, you do not have these license fees complex. Well, I know enterprises that they have only job roles for people managing licenses. Is the license managed, account management or something like that, you know? So imagine, wow, imagine. Yeah. This is happening. And they are only there to manage the licenses that they have from different vendors, right? And obviously, scale and security. the possibility to scale and have a real impact on roadmap is huge, and you do not have this with others, right? So I think that, yes, I'm talking a lot. I'm a sales guy, you know, like machine gun.
It's great. But go on then. So with your sales hat on, you're in an elevator with someone just for 30 seconds. How do we summarize what we've been talking about? Why should we be paying for free software?
As a sales guy, I always have elevator speech for everything, right? If I need to summarize something between floor one and floor three, which are only two floors, so that should be quick. At the end of the day, open source is not just about saving money, which is something that you always think, no? It's about freedom. We discussed this at the beginning, and I think it's good to finish with this freedom. It gives enterprises and organizations true digital sovereignty, ensures interoperability with partners, customers, technologies, and also keeping control of your data in your hands. So I think that's the most important thing.
Amazing. Hello, Crespo. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. It's been a pleasure talking with you as always.
Likewise. Very, very happy to be here. Thanks for the opportunity and thanks for hosting me.